Hello, and welcome to Nightcap with Jim. I am the titular Jim, and tonight we will have what will be for now the last episode of Jim Goes to the Movies until quarantine lockdown mode has ended. We will be discussing some kid-friendly fare with Onward, Call of the Wild, Sonic the Hedgehog, Spies in Disguise, Doolittle, and Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. For more content you may enjoy, please check out our Morning Manga Me podcast and our other social media content at Manga Me Players across all the different social medias. From there, you can find our newer social media pages with joint productions and What for Food, where we do stuff with food. But for now, it's time to talk about movies, so let's get into it. Alrighty, so I'm doing these in the reverse order of how I actually saw them in theaters. So we start with the latest release, Onward, which is a wonderful animated movie, magical tale of two teenage brothers who are trying to cast a spell to bring their father back from the grave so they can spend one more day with him before he goes to his final resting place, whatever that may be. I mean, hey, any movie that's got magic in it, I'm in. Tom Holland, Chris Pratt, that's a plus. So, just early doors right off the bat. Very good movie. It took a little bit to get going, in my personal opinion. But it's a very, very solid movie. I gave it an 8 out of 10. So, really, really good. It's just, there's some stuff that I just don't need in the beginning of the movie. Just like Burly, Chris Pratt's character, the older brother, just, you know, some of his ridiculousness, and then some of the, you know, like how the younger brother played by Tom Holland is, you know, a little kind of awkward and shy and introverted and stuff like that, and he's trying to break out of his shell. 'Cause like, none of this, him at school stuff, like, really plays into what goes on in the rest of the movie. So, it's like, if it doesn't have something to, if it doesn't connect to something by the second act, don't need it. You know what I mean? It's just not going to do anything for me. 'Cause you could just have, like, a 2-minute scene where he goes to school, he's awkward, and, you know, stuff like that. Take 2 minutes, that's all you need, and, you know, you come to the end of the movie and stuff, and, like, basically what I'm saying is, like, if you're going to show the kid at school being awkward with people, if you don't show him at school at the end of the movie not being awkward anymore, then I don't need you to show me that he was awkward at school. You know what I'm saying? It's, like, it's unnecessary information for me to have. Because you could have just, like I said, the scene's just too long. If they just did 2 minutes, boom. 2 minutes, he's awkward, he bumps into people, he's not, you know, because he's not looking where he's going, he doesn't know how to talk to people, he, you know, like, 2 minutes, done, out. But, you know, they drew it out for a little. But anyway, once the actual adventure starts, then it gets really good. I mean, the Manticore is just a hilarious character, and just masterfully well done. And, you know, was one of my favorite parts of the movies, for sure. And then once the, the kid starts, like, really being able to use spells and magic and stuff, like, the movie just, like, it just keeps getting better and better as the movie goes on. That's kind of a rare thing where you just get this, you start at one point and then the movie just, you know, keeps getting better, and it doesn't ever, like, doesn't plateau, and it doesn't, you know, like, it gets real, oh, it's really, and now it's not, now it's getting a little bit worse, now it's getting better again, now it's getting better, like, it doesn't peak and then, you know, and then go back down and then start going back up again. Like, it's just this continual, it's just a straight rise of just the movie just keeps getting better until the very end. And that is just so cool. So I would love to see these guys, this team, get another, get a shot to make a sequel to this, because if they can do it once, I'm sure they could do it again, where, you know, like the like because the sequel would start at, you know, the awesome level of where the first movie is at the end of it. So it's already starting at a level of super awesome. So if they were able to, you know, keep going on that and just keep make that sequel in the same with that same sort of just like it just keep getting better and better and better and better and better, then we could have a new How to Train Your Dragon situation on our hands in terms of like just another awesome franchise that, you know, has heart and soul to it. So yeah, you know, it's just a good time movie that, you know, can make you think about some stuff. And for anybody in the audience who's like, oh, animated films, like those are for kids, right? Like, I strongly disagree. You know, it really bothers me when the theater was open that I work at, how a lot, and it was, you know, pretty much exclusively senior citizens. Like, there are plenty of like teenagers and, you know, like young people, but usually it was couples. So like a little kind of a date day or whatever, just like, oh, let's go see a movie. And you know, guys don't get to choose anything when they go on dates, apparently. So, I mean, that's what I'm seeing, you know what I mean? Like, I've chosen to do stuff before. I don't know why nobody else can, but whatever. but anyway, you know, like, so, like, these kinds of movies, they have a cross-generational appeal. So it bothers me when people are like, oh, these are just for kids, blah, blah, blah. It's like, there are plenty of adult themes in these kinds of movies, you know what I mean? And, you know, especially, like, if you're a teenager and you've got a brother or a sibling, you know, you can definitely get something out of a movie like this where the two main characters are teenage siblings. You know, so, I don't know. It just bothers me that, like, disdain for, like, animated films. Like, they're just for children or whatever. And, you know, like, the same thing, like, people are like, some people are like, oh, comic book movies, those are just for, like, those are for, like, teenagers and stuff. There's nothing there that I could get anything out of. And it's like, bro, watch Watchmen. You know what I'm saying? Like, have you not, like, the first rated R superhero movie? Like, that's brutal. You know? I mean, and then you even look at, like, the Marvel and DC movies, and it's like, dude, that's some adult stuff. Like, you can, you know, I mean, like, you look at Iron Man's journey, it's like, that dude, that's a straight up, you know, war hero's story. So, you know what I mean? I don't know why I'm telling you guys this. None of you are senior citizens, I doubt, so I'm not going to change any of your minds. But anyway, onward. Really good movie, solid. I gave it an 8 out of 10, so definite recommend watch to check out. All right, stick around, I'll be right back, and we're going to be talking about Call of the Wild. All right, we're back to talk about Call of the Wild. This is the Harrison Ford starring movie with the adventurous dog who goes on many adventures through trials and tribulations and such. And it's just an epic story about an epic, awesome, amazing canine named Buck, who is just one of the coolest dog animal characters in cinema history, in my opinion. Yeah, I said it. I went there. So basically the idea is this. Buck is, he's this big raucous dog, likes to have a good time hanging out and everything like that, and he lives with this pretty well-to-do family, and one night he just does some stuff, and he doesn't get to stay inside. His punishment is to sleep out on the porch. And he gets tricked and kidnapped by some nefarious ne'er-do-wells to sell him for some quick dollarinis, because the guy's basically a scumbag. Because, I mean, who kidnaps a dog and sells him, right? So it starts out kind of in a, like, it goes from a pretty light place to gets pretty dark pretty quick. the movie. And that's kind of how it goes, you know, as the movie, you know, progresses. I was going to compare it to this one movie, but I decided not to do that. But so it's like it starts out light, then it gets dark, and then it gets a little bit lighter, and then it gets lighter a little bit more, and then it gets dark, and then it gets really light, but also kind of intense, and then it gets kind of dark again, and then it gets light again, and then it gets dark again. like it's a real roller coaster ride of a movie. Let me tell you what, because I mean this dog Buck, he just goes through the ringer, man. I mean, he goes from being like a prisoner to being a workhorse on a sled team to being the team's leader, to then the team disbanding, and then, you know, to the team sticks together, the dogs stick together, but the human people, they go away. And then this new dude comes in, and he's a total jerkwad, and he, you know, and Harrison Ford's there, here and there through it, and then finally the dog comes to Harrison, and then they go on an adventure, and like, so it's just these ups and downs of stuff, and it's just so amazing, though, what they did story-wise, because from what I understand, this movie is based on a book, and from what I understand, the book is pretty different. It's interesting to see what they did taking that source material and adapting it, and in whatever changes they made. I'm not sure what they were, but I thought the movie was just absolutely fantastic. It's gorgeously shot. The locations, and then even the set design that they did, is just incredible. Absolutely fantastic. The animation on the dog is spectacular. I mean, there are times where you literally forget that it's not a real dog that you're looking at. That's how good this animation is. And the performances are great all around, you know. Harrison just kills it, and I mean, it's like, if you think about it, Harrison Ford was really perfectly cast. I mean, if you're gonna cast somebody like an older person to act opposite a CGI character, who better to do it than, you know, one of the actors from the birth of the modern era of special effects in film, you know what I mean? Star Wars. And who better to get than like somebody like Harrison Ford or Mark Hamill, you know, like somebody who's been doing big special effects driven films since the advent of modern day, like the modern day techniques that, you know, started in the 60s and 70s, and, you know, we still use some of them today. At least Peter Jackson does, and some other guys. but, you know, just so well done, this movie. It's so, so well made, and I love how the real main character is Buck throughout the whole thing, and he's the one that ties the whole story together. That is so tough to do when you're talking about a character who doesn't have dialogue. And part of it, you know, is there's an ease to it because, you know, he's a dog and he's very expressive. So, you know, it's not like a person who is, like a mute person who doesn't have the power of speech or refuses to speak or whatever. It's an animal, a type of animal that is universally adored, i.e. a dog. If you don't like dogs, then, I mean, how do you not like dogs? You know what I mean? Like, that's just ridiculous. I don't, you know. So there's this kind of it lets you come into it. Like the movie lets you come to it. And that's I love that. It's just such a good goddamn movie. I shouldn't have cursed right there, excuse me. But it's just really good. You know what I mean? It's just so good. All right. That's enough of my rantings and ravings on that for now. Take a quick break, come back, and we're going to be talking about Sonic the Hedgehog. All right. Now for Sonic the Hedgehog. This is... it was good, you know. It was good. It's not like one of my favorite movies I've ever seen, though. But it was good, you know. It was solid. I'd say like a 7 out of 10. You know, I'll definitely watch it again. But you know, there's not a lot of replay in it for me personally. And I've been a fan of Sonic the Hedgehog since I was a kid. You know, I played the games and everything like that. So I dig Sonic. I don't know. I just didn't vibe with it. Maybe, you know, again, it might have just been a mood thing where, maybe I just wasn't in the right, like the exact right mood to watch it to get my full enjoyment out of it. Because, I mean, I've probably talked about it a few times before on the show, but I'm really weird. Like, when people are like, oh, you gotta watch this, you gotta watch that, I'm like, okay, and I'll put it on my watch list, and sometimes it can just sit there in the watch list for months, years, even, and, you know, people are like, you still haven't seen it yet? Come on, man, and it's just like, well, I just have to be in the right mood, you know, for one thing, I need to be in the right mood to watch a certain thing. If it's like, you know, if it's not just like a crazy balls to the wall action movie, I need to be in a kind of a mood for it, you know what I mean? Because it's just like, because basically where I want my head space to be at is, there's nothing I would rather watch right now than this thing, you know what I mean? So that didn't really happen for a couple of movies that I'm talking about, like Onward. You know, it was more like, I've got to see it now before it goes out of theaters or before the theater closes because of the lockdown stuff. And this was kind of the same thing. It was just like, I just have to go see it so I can talk about it on the show. And I think that kind of screws me up a little bit sometimes, with like Onward and with Sonic and with Alita Battle Angel, you know. Movies that I want to see, but it's just like, you know, and so I think I'm going to be a lot more selective in the future. But anyway, to talk about the actual movie instead of myself, it was really good. You know, it was well made. Sonic was very well animated. Ben Schwartz, I thought, did a pretty good job for the most part voicing Sonic. The things that really took me out was, like, there's just one really dated dance move that it's that thing with the arms going back and forth, and, like, it's such a stupid dance move. Like, it's, I think from, it's it like, I don't know if it's from Fortnite or, like, they put it into Fortnite or whatever, you know, it's where you swing your arms back and forth and then you swing them the other way and, like, one arm's in front of you and one arm's behind your body. And it's like, I hate that move so much, and Sonic did that dance twice in the movie, and so I, honestly, I'm being petty here, but I docked it 2 points just for that stupid-ass dance move. Like, straight up, guys, I'm being petty about it, and I don't care, and I'm not apologizing for it, because that dance is so dumb, and that dates the movie so hard. Like, in 20 years' time, if people watch this movie, and they see that stupid dance, and they lived in this time, like, if they were, like, 10 years old or whatever, like, because if you're 10, 15, like, teenager or whatever, you've probably done that move, or if you're, like, in your 30s and you want to be hip and cool, you've probably tried to do that stupid, dumb dance move. and you're going to watch this movie, and they're going to, you know, those people are going to watch this movie in 15, 20 years time, and they're going to, like, look at it and be like, that's so stupid. And then they're going to remember them doing the dance move, and then they're going to be like, oh, God, I was such a, garbage person. Because that, it makes me angry. It really does. But anyway, other than that, the movie is really good. James Marsden did a really good job of being, you know, kind of of being the leading man of the picture. And Jim Carrey was absolutely fantastic. I mean, this is the kind of role that we all love to see Jim Carrey in, where he gets to just kind of be zany and wacky and fun. But what's so great, and why you cast Jim Carrey as this guy, as Dr. Robotnik, is because he can go to the dark place but make it funny. You know what I mean? Like, so when him and Sonic are having their climactic duel, you know, like, Robotnik, he's coming at Sonic hard, you know what I mean? And, like, Carrey's able to somehow make evil zany and hilarious, you know, and there's not a lot of actors who can pull that off. So definitely doff my cap to the legendary Jim Carrey, because he's just so great. But yeah, so overall though, I give the movie a 7 out of 10 right now. Maybe I'll bump it up to an 8 sometime in the future when I watch it again, but right now, 7, and it would have been an 8, genuinely, honestly, it would have been an 8 without the dumb dance, you know what I mean? Without that stupid dance move, it would have been an 8, but, you know, I can't even, you know? But yeah, so, good movie. I don't know how hard I would recommend it, though, just right now, off of me sitting here. I mean, if you like Sonic the Hedgehog, I would give it a watch. But, you know, it was good. Alright, so I'm actually going to skip ahead now. I'm going to skip over one movie, and we're going to do Spies in Disguise next. Alright, so stay tuned. Coming back, we're going to talk about Spies in Disguise. Okay, so before I start on this movie, full disclosure, it doesn't technically belong in a Jim Goes to the Movies episode, because I did not go to the movies to see it. I watched it at home. But it's the same, a similar type movie to the rest of these in the list, and I'm not going to give it its own episode, because I don't have an entire episode's worth of stuff to say about it, so it slides in. It snuck its way in, which is appropriate since it's a spy movie. I'm not sure how I feel about the movie, because I liked it, but I'm not sure if I liked it as much as I thought I was going to. Or maybe I did. I'm not really sure. This movie's kind of confounded me, you know? I definitely have to watch it again. Because I thought it was really, really good, and so, like, I think I rated it, like, a 7 or an 8 out of 10. And I love the dynamic between Will Smith in Tom Holland's characters, the idea of this super spy being turned into a pigeon, and them having to, you know, go on these spy ops as this, you know, super awkward nerdy dude who invents super weird things, they're super weird gadgets and whatnot. But what really makes them weird is that they make sense to a certain degree. Like, because this guy, this particular inventor, he invents things that can't hurt people, but can save the day, which is super trippy because everybody else, you know, like they're like an early scene. It has, you know, has Will Smith's character Lance walking through like the lab area, and things are, you know, like there's flamethrowers coming out of a pen, and you know, like a bomb in a quarter or whatever. You know, your typical, what you'd think of as being spy gadgets, but of course, so over the top as an animated movie is wont to do. Just for, you know, like, I don't know if it's to make a point or just to, you know, have that contrast of like, these guys all look like evil gadget makers because they're making stuff that blows up and sets people on fire and, you know, teleports them to the quantum realm or the Phantom Zone where, you know, Zod and them go. But, and over here you have this little guy who, you know, makes gadgets and stuff that, they just can't hurt people. Like, they're designed to not hurt people, but, you know, also complete whatever objective, like, you know, like a bubblegum prison thing or what, I don't know, you know, like a bubble prison, like, or something like that. And so it's really cool to see this kid, you know, come out of his shell when he's on these missions with the world's greatest secret agent, who is now a pigeon, and then you have this cadre of pigeons who are following Lance around, talking about, brr, brr, brr. And he's just, Lance is like, no, we can't do that, we're gonna do this. And, like, it's like, okay, this is super trippy. But it's a really good movie, I think. And I think I'm not sure if I thought I was going to like it more than I did like it, or if I liked it more than I thought I was going to. Did I just say the same thing twice? Let me try that again. Take two. I'm not sure if I liked it more or less than I thought I was going to. It's confusing me in my brain, but... regardless of how I thought I was going to like it, I did thoroughly enjoy it. And the relationship between these two guys is really interesting. Like, there was a lot to mine there in terms of like motivation and things like that, character-y stuff. So really good movie, really solid. I'm going to say, yeah, 8 out of 10 on this. So pretty good stuff. Pretty good stuff. All right. Yeah, that's pretty much all I got for that. So now we're going to move on to my second favorite movie of this group of films I'm talking about, which is the Robert Downey Jr. starring Doolittle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, now I'm really excited to talk about this next movie, but also a little bit bummed out because it didn't do so hot critically or at the box office, but I freaking loved it, and that movie is Doolittle, starring Robert Downey Jr., Tom Holland, Octavia Spencer, Emma Thompson, Rami Malek, Ralph Fiennes, Michael Sheen. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Like, the cast is insane. Just absolutely insane. One of the best casts. One of the best voice casts. One of the best casts. Just one of the best casts, period. Just so incredible. And I just adored this movie. I adore it so much. It was so damn good. You know what I mean? I shouldn't be cursing, but it was so damn good. I mean, ooh. Yeah. So, just right off the bat, I don't understand why this movie didn't do so well. The only thing I can find, objectively speaking, wrong with it is Robert Downey Jr.'s accent And even though it's not a great Welsh accent, it's a consistent accent throughout. Like, he doesn't, like, drop the accent at one point and then pick it back up again. It's not like Kevin Costner in Robin Hood. You know what I mean? Like, it's a consistent accent. And Welsh is a really difficult accent to try and do. I'm not even going to attempt to try and show you what a Welsh accent sounds like. Because that's how hard it is to do. You know what I'm saying? It's very, very difficult. I mean, like, if you went on a road trip to Wales and you saw, like, their signs, the roadside signs, they have words in Welsh that are, like, 58 syllables long. And it's just like, what is that? You know what I mean? Is that an email address? What is, like, is that a URL? What the, is that like 00100100100100100 as like letters? Like, what is that? Like, Glarfen Blugen Flurglargen Blugen Schlorgen Vigargen. I don't understand what that word is. And then you hear a Welsh person like say it and it's like Florbindle or whatever. It's an actual sound that makes sense somehow, but you can't do it yourself. It's like a secret, like their own secret code that the Welsh have to confuse, like the other English, like the English and the Irish and the Scots, like just like, ha ha ha, you'll never figure out what we're saying over here. Ha ha ha, you can't even read it. Like, I don't know. It's a tough accent to do. All right. It's not easy. So like that's the only thing I really thought that was really anything wrong with it, because like the way the story developed, I mean, and played out, the interaction between the characters was great, you know, and all, and you know, introducing these new people and that person and this animal, it just kept everything fresh and exciting. You know, it was just a really great adventure story. You know what I mean? And my favorite thing about it is they actually explain how Doolittle can talk to animals. I haven't seen it in well over a decade, but the Eddie Murphy Doolittle movie, Dr. Doolittle, I don't remember if they explain or not how it is he can talk to animals. As far as I remember it, he was like a veterinarian and like just kind of was like disillusioned with life or whatever, and just woke up one day with, and you know, like walked downstairs and like his dog, he could hear, like he could talk to his dog or whatever it was. You know what I mean? Like, I don't remember. But I don't remember anybody ever explaining how he's able to do it. Maybe they did, I just don't remember. Like I said, I haven't seen it in well over a decade. But I love the fact about this movie that they do explain how Doolittle can talk to animals, and it's just the simplest thing is, like, he just deciphered what the sounds an animal makes mean. He's just a translator. It's not some sort of magical power. It's not, like, a gift from God or, like, some kind of mutation in the, you know, genetic structure. It's just literally the guy sat down with a dog, and the dog goes, burr! And he was like, burr! And then figured out how, like, you know, just built upon that. And so, like, there's the great scene where they transition from him speaking English with the animals and the animals speaking English back, and transitioning into, you know, ooh, 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 yeah. Like, and so it goes from, you know, and it's just like, what the heck? You know, and so for that kind of thing, for a kind of transitionary scene like that, to be able to even work a little bit, you need a great actor. And Robert Downey Jr. just blew me away, you know, just killed it. Again, minus the Welsh accent. But hey, at least his bad Welsh accent is consistent. You know what I mean? Like, again, it's consistent. One of the things that people have said that this movie, one of the problems people have said this movie has is the tone is inconsistent. So, like, it doesn't know if it's being an adventure movie or if it's trying to be funny or if it's trying to be dark. It's, like, all over the place. And I'm just like, have you ever watched a movie before? I mean, this is a movie that has been poorly reviewed. And, again, I'm having to question whether critics, like some of these critics, actually watch movies or if they even like movies. You know what I mean? Like, because I've heard some, like, just heinous stuff. I mean, not necessarily heinous. That might be a bit of an overreach. But just, like, haters are gonna hate. You know what I mean? And I just wish they wouldn't. Because literally anybody I talk to who has actually seen this movie loved it. You know what I mean? They thought it was fantastic. It was a wonderful, magical, fantastical adventure film that took them on a really great ride. And, you know what I mean? And these are people that, you know, like most of them from our customers that I would see at work. And a lot of them are regulars. And so, like, they see a lot of movies. And that means that they like movies. You know what I mean? They don't go to a movie to crap on it and to give it a hard time. They want to enjoy a movie. And the only time they don't enjoy a movie is when they don't like the movie. You know what I mean? I mean, that sounds pretty reductive, because, like, that's the whole point, is, like, that's the mechanics of how art works. It's like, you want to experience a piece of art, and then you want to enjoy it, and the only reason you wouldn't enjoy it is if you didn't enjoy it. It's like, duh, that's how it works. But, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I feel like there are these people out there, and they have this voice, and they go to experience art, and then they just, I don't know if it's like their brains are broken, or if they're just bad people, like, or they just don't like to like things, but they use their voice and the power that they have as a person who reviews things professionally, who other people listen to, and then, you know, I mean, and it can, like, nowadays with the internet and, like, with my show, Nightcap with Jim, you have just regular old people who can talk about stuff, and, you know, the only thing that stops me from doing my thing is if you right there, who's listening to my voice right now, come out of this magic, whatever you're listening to it on, device, your phone, your laptop, or whatever, your car stereo, this wonderful, magical, technological marvel thing, and if you don't listen to it, then I can't do the show. You know what I mean? Whereas some of these guys, you know, like, you know, review for prestigious publications, or at least publications that have enough respect within the industry of art, you know, be able to have a voice and an opinion and have it be listened to by a large group of people. And I feel like a lot of these guys just use that power they have to just trash things that, for whatever reason, they don't want to like it. And then they go and see it, they experience it, and then they just find reasons to tear it down. Because an adventure film is essentially, at its heart, supposed to be all over the place in terms of tone. That's what an adventure film does. Have you not seen Indiana Jones? You know, come on, dude. Like, the most famous adventure franchise is, objectively speaking, Indiana Jones. You know what I mean? And those movies get super dark, and, like, but then they're super light and, you know, like, funny moment, like, just hilarious gut-busting moments. And then there's, like, moments, like, that are really funny, but they're also really dark, like when the swordsman, you know, is in the street and he's just like, And spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movies, but they've been out for 40 years now, so you had plenty of chances. But, you know, and then Indy just goes and shoots him, you know, as he's showing off. And it's like, that just came about because Harrison Ford didn't want to do a fight scene because he had a cold or whatever. You know what I mean? He's just like, man, I'm not really feeling this. How about if I just shoot him? And then Spielberg was like, okay, we'll do that. And iconic, you know what I mean? That's an iconic moment. And it's funny, but it's also dark because you're talking about a guy who just got shot in the face. You know what I mean? So it's like, have you seen an adventure film before where you're like, it's all over the place. It doesn't know what it's trying to do. Like, that's the whole point of an adventure movie. It's supposed to have, like crazy action stuff, perilous moments, near-death experiences, possible, like, full-on death experiences, comedy, tragedy, maybe even, like, horror thriller-type vibes, you know what I mean? Just scary stuff. Like, it's supposed to take... It's a roller coaster ride. That's the whole point of an adventure movie. So when I hear reviews of, like, it doesn't know... It's like, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. Like, legitimately, some of these critics don't understand... excuse me, don't understand movies, you know? And, oh God, sorry, I'm getting a little worked up here. And it just really, really gets my dander up. Because this movie could have done a lot better if some of these critics knew movies, knew a damn thing about cinema. You know what I mean? Like, if there were like 100,000 of you that were listening to me right at this very moment, we could turn it around. Like, we could have turned it around. You know what I mean? Like, if I had that access to 100,000, 500,000, a million people, like, a movie like this that is so good, because you guys listen to me, you trust my opinions, maybe you don't, maybe, you know, you trust that I believe in my opinions, and you're going to go and form your own opinions, but you're like, oh, well, if Jim says it's good, then I should give it a chance, you know, and these other critics, they just trash on a thing, and then the thing can fail, and it's like, why, you know, I mean... Yes, okay, I will tell you this, okay, they did have to do reshoots, because the studio, again, and this is a studio thing, which is, like, really stupid, where the studio will greenlight a script, they'll hear the pitch from the director and producers, and they'll be like, okay, here's $100 million, go have fun, and then they get the finished product back, and they're like, this isn't exactly what we thought was going to go down. And it's like, why? Why do you think that? You read the script, right? You listened to the pitch. Like, you listened to the director talk about how he was going to make the movie, the way he was going to make it, and how how everything was going to progress, and the vibe that he was going for. Why do you now, magically, suddenly... think that the movie's going to be something different than what the guy was telling you it was going to be for 3 months of pre-production or however long. You know what I mean? It's like, do you ever, like, do these studio executives actually, pay attention to what's going on until, like, the movie's in the can and they can sit down? Like, do they, because there's, if you don't know anything about the process, right, there's a thing called dailies, okay? And it's exactly what it sounds. You take all the footage you shot that day, you sit down, and you watch it. And so you can, get a vibe of how the it's starting to form together. And, some guys, like Kevin Smith is a really good example, because he, ever since he shot Clerks 2, he edits his movies, like he shoots during the day, like, during the shooting day, and then once the shooting is over, he'll go to his hotel room or whatever, and he'll sit on his computer, his laptop or whatever, and he'll start to edit scenes together. And that way, because he's even had a couple of times by the last day of shooting, he's got a rough edit of the film ready to go. Just boom. And so you can do that. You can, like, start to edit certain scenes together, and so you get, you can see how the movie's starting to take shape and everything like that. It's like, if you're a studio executive and you have $150 million on the line, why are you not showing up for this? You know what I mean? And then change course while they're still shooting, instead of, you know, seeing the thing and then being like, okay, I didn't really like that. Can you go shoot some other stuff? Because that's not what you said was I was going to get. And it's like, yes, that's exactly what I told you were going to get. You just didn't listen to me, and now you want something different. And then that screws up so many movies. So this movie had to do some reshoots, and they did it with a different director. Now, normally that's a huge, huge red flag, but I was like, Robert Downey Jr.'s got this. He knows what he's doing. And I was right, in my opinion. You know, I thought that it was, you know, like, there's literally one shot in the entire movie where I could objectively be like, okay, I'm pretty sure that was Jonathan Liebsman and not Stephen Graham. If that's what the, but anyway, you know, like, there's just, like, one, it's just one handheld shot, and that's the only one where I was like, that's probably the other guy, not the, you know, that's probably not the original guy, it's probably the other guy. And that's it. It's one shot, and even then I'm like, maybe, you know what I mean? So, yeah, studios and critics really piss me off sometimes, and this is a great example of why. Because it just doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? Like, you know what, like, a good, like, a really good reshoot story was Mad Max Fury Road, where they gave him a bunch of money, and, you know, he went off and did his thing, George Miller, he did his thing, and then he came back, and they were like, dude, this is awesome. If we give you a little bit more money, could you go do some more awesome stuff like this? And he was like, yeah, I could do that. And then he went off and, you know, and Mad Max Fury Road. So it's like, I just wish these studio executives could just be a little bit smarter and think things through a little bit more. Be present and actually, you know, be a part of the process if you want to have a say in how the movie gets made, you know? Because if you just rubber stamp it and say, go do your thing, then you have literally no reason to say diddly squat once filming's completed and, you know, you sit down and see a rough cut. Because if you just throw money at somebody and they go and do the thing that they came to you to get the money for, and you come back with no involvement in the process whatsoever, you should just shut up. That's how I feel about it. But anyway, Doolittle, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I didn't really have any complaints with it that I could dock points for. You know, I mean, like I said, the accent thing, it's not a great Welsh accent, but at least it's an accent and it's consistent, so I can't dock a point from the movie just because the accent's not a great Welsh accent. It's still an accent. And it's technically a good accent in that it's consistent. So I thought it was great. I loved it to death. I adore the movie. I definitely highly recommend it. And if you could be a sport, buy it. You know what I mean? Like, or rent it first. I don't care. But after you rent it, and you like it, because I know you will, buy it, so we can try to just get some of the money back, you know what I mean, and kind of mitigate the floppy status of it, you know what I'm saying, like, help a brother out, but yeah, Doolittle, awesome, 10 out of 10, loved it, liked it, adored it. It's awesome. All right. I'm going to take a break. Then we're going to come back and talk about Star Wars Episode 9. Rise of the Skywalker. All right. Quick break. Right back. Star Wars. Alrighty, here we are, finally, to talk about Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. Where to begin? Well, basically, this is my personal favorite Star Wars movie ever. I just absolutely loved this movie, you know. I thought it was perfect. There's nothing I would do to change it. There's no way I could see it could be improved in any way, outside of things that are just not possible, like Carrie Fisher not dying. But even if she hadn't unfortunately passed away, I think what happened with her character was just so poignant and beautifully well done, that I would have, that just the way that it was just perfect, you know, to me. And the only reason I think that I have such the reaction that I do is because, for one thing, I've been a Star Wars fan nearly all my life. You know, I started watching the original trilogy when I was a kid, and I'm old enough that when I was a kid, I got the last few years to squeak in viewings of it before George Lucas went and re-edited and like added such stuff with like, in, you know, special effect things and whatnot. So I got to see the original trilogy as it was when it came out in theaters, you know, and so that's how long I've been a Star Wars fan. And growing up being a fan of Star Wars, you know, I mean, especially because I was born in the 90s. So for me, seeing the original trilogy and then, you know, just a couple of years, maybe a year or two later, Phantom Menace came out, and then, you know, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. It was like just this, you know, I rolled from one thing almost immediately into the next, as opposed to, you know, someone who was alive in the 70s when the originals came out in theaters, and then having to wait 30 years for the prequel trilogy, and then having to wait another 15 years for the new one. So just for me, seeing this movie in theaters was just an incredibly profound experience for me, because it was the culmination of, you know, 20 some years of my life, this story, this saga, the Skywalker saga, that's been so important to me as a lover of cinema, you know what I mean? And I also am taking into account the whole story, you know what I mean? Like, I was thinking about the movie, about Rise of Skywalker, in the context of it being that thing, this culmination of an epic journey, you know, that's taken so much time to make and tell. So, you know, I'm sitting there in the theater and I'm thinking about things from the prequels, I'm thinking about things from the original trilogy, I'm thinking about things from Force Awakens and The Last Jedi that, you know, and that all this stuff is just rattling around in my brain as I'm experiencing this thing. And it's all subconscious, you know, I wasn't like actively seeking out things or moments or any of that stuff. It was just like, this is it. And I even audibly said under my breath, as the movie started, you know, and the theme kicked in and the text crawl started, I was like, this is it. Here we are. And, you know, I was very emotional about this. It was a very emotional experience for me. Again, because of what I, you know, all the stuff I just said. And, you know, I don't want to get into a huge thing about, like, an argument or anything like that at this moment. You know, I'm more than happy to talk about the entire saga with anybody who would like. You know, because I know that we all of us Star Wars fans have different opinions on this. Heath is a great example. He really likes the prequel trilogy, and, you know, there are plenty of us who are like, meh, and, you know, and I know there's people out there who like The Phantom Menace or even love The Phantom Menace, and there's a lot of us who are like, The Phantom Menace can just go to hell. And then there are some people who are like, The Phantom Menace is good, it's just that darn kid who's playing Anakin, it's like, and everybody's like, it's all his fault, and then Jar Jar Binks can bite it, and, you know, so it's like, there are good things about it and bad things, like, so, like, this spectrum of Star Wars fandom is all over the place, in terms of liking stuff and not liking stuff. You know, we're all individually part of a fandom, and that's, I think, one of the things that makes Star Wars so special, is it kind of invites that sort of divisiveness amongst its fans. Maybe not invite, but it definitely, you know, it definitely didn't shy away from it, because, you know, there are a lot of you guys out there who do not like The Last Jedi, and I do, and, you know, and the thing is, this is why I say that Rise of Skywalker is my favorite, and why I would say it, you know, I would even put it up, not as just my favorite, but I would say it's the best Star Wars film, period. You know, if I was going to rate them, I would do Rise of Skywalker and then Empire. You know what I mean? And I think all of us agree that Empire has always been the best Star Wars movie. But for me, you know, I think Rise is the best. And again, for the reasons I said, you know, you have to take into account the entirety of the saga. So without, you know, a movie that maybe you don't like The Last Jedi or The Phantom Menace, you know, or whatever, without every single moment, the moments that occur in Rise of Skywalker are next to meaningless. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to have the whole story to get to Rise of Skywalker. And with me, I've seen all these Star Wars movies so many times that, again, like I said, it was just subconscious in my brain, just like, you know, just thinking of this moment or that moment as it's happening on the screen in front of me. And, you know, like, come, you know, this is the end of this incredible journey. And so, you know, I'm finding it very difficult to articulate my thoughts right now, because this is just so much of an emotional thing to me. You know, I mean, I can go back and, you know, get all the technical details and talk about that stuff when, you know, I do a big old Star Wars Skywalker saga review thing and talk about the entirety of the saga. But if I'm just talking about, you know, Star Wars in the context of Rise of Skywalker, it's just, it's pure emotion, you know. And to illustrate that point, this movie made me cry more and cry harder than any other movie I've seen in theaters, for sure. And it's definitely up there in terms of how much it made me cry, just as out of anything I've ever seen or experienced in terms of art. You know, I've had plenty of movies that have made me sob uncontrollably, but I don't think any quite as much as this. I mean, look, we all cry at the end of Toy Story 3. that's just how it is. You know what I mean? I don't think as many people had an experience like I did, where I get to the moment where the stuff happens with Leia and Chewie finds out about it, and that made me cry. Bing! One. Then I got to the, you know, the finale, the climax, and there's a moment, and I'm not, again, this is not a spoiler cast, so don't worry, but I got to this one particular moment, and I started to sob uncontrollably. And then a couple of minutes later, and this was a sad sob, then I got, there was a couple minutes later, another moment, and that made me weep tears of pure joy, which I've never done. Like, I've maybe had, like, a happy cry once or twice, but I'm talking about full-on, like, cartoon, anime, you know, tears shooting out of my eyes, kind of thing, and it just was this roller coaster ride of just sad tears, happy tears, sad tears, happy tears, sad tears, happy tears. And I'm just ping-ponging back and forth like, you know, I'm Forrest Gump at the, you know, ping-pong Olympic championship match in wherever it was in the movie. But, you know what I mean? Just bing-bong, bing-bong, bing-bap, bing-bap, bing, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it was just the most emotional cinematic experience I've had. And I mean that in just the terms of, like, watching a movie and then also it being in a movie theater where I saw it and not at home, where, you know, I definitely feel much more open and vulnerable when I'm at home. Because there's nobody around, you know what I mean? Like, there's nobody to, like, there's no, like, because when I watch movies at home, I'm very, very strict about it. So, like, if I'm in my area, my zone, my space, I don't tolerate people coming to, like, visit or hang out or anything like that. It's like, if you want to hang out, we can do that. Or I'm going to watch a movie, or you can watch that movie with me, but no talk, there's no talking, you don't get to talk. Like, if you're sitting there and, you know, like every 5 minutes, like, what is that about? Like, ooh, like asking questions and stuff, I'll shut it down and I'll just be like, nope, we're not doing this anymore. You can go and watch this on your own. I'm very, very, very strict about it because I want to have the experience that I want to have when I'm watching a movie or a TV show, because I've mentioned it before, guys, I get sucked into this stuff. I get sucked into these worlds. And for me to get 100% enjoyment, I can't have anything take me out of the moment. And that's why going to the theater for me is always kind of a roll of the dice, because I cannot stand Chatty Cathy's and Gibber Gabbers and Grobble Grobble. Ping! Text message, ping! Text message, ping! Text message. I cannot stand these distractions. And because I'm sitting there, I'm trying to watch a movie, and you got these guys talking about the freaking, you know, Raiders game, you know, results, and it's just like, shut up, dude. If you want to talk about sports or whatever, do that literally anywhere else. Literally anywhere else but inside a movie theater while a movie is playing. You know what I mean? Like, it's like someone talking at the theater. And I don't mean like the movie I mean like the theater watching a live play. It's like, what kind of a scumbag are you? Like, for real, dude. You know what I mean? To be, you know, blah, 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 I have things to say right now, while freaking, you know, Laurence Olivier is up there just killing it, killing some Shakespeare, You know what I mean? It's like, you are just a garbage human being if you do that stuff. So, you know, so for a movie to make me cry when I'm watching it in a movie theater, it definitely is, like, it's, that's, that means that movie is, like, hitting me really hard. So for me to be weeping for 20 or 30 minutes uncontrollably in the middle of a movie theater, and I'm not, and I wasn't even, like, that's how into the movie I was. I wasn't even self-conscious about it or embarrassed or anything like that. It was like, this movie is making me feel things. And the strangest thing about it is the kind of movie it is. It's a big blockbuster sci-fi adventure saga quest thing. And you wouldn't, you know, you probably wouldn't guess that, you know, somebody would go into that if you just described the movie to them, just like, oh yeah, it's the ninth movie in this saga about, you know, these crazy wizards with laser swords and, you know, ruffians and scruffy-headed nerf herder rogues. You know, and these other wizards who are evil, and they also have laser swords, but sometimes they don't because they just use their wizard powers, because they don't need a lightsaber, a laser sword, because that's how badass their wizard powers are. And you know, and there's also spaceships and traveling in space travel, and, you know, like, and oh yeah, there's also galactic senate thing, you know, of sci-fi government deal, and then, you know, like, and then, you know, and you're probably gonna cry at the end of this one. Like, you probably would be like, psh, okay, I'm gonna cry, sure. But that's how it was for me, man. Like, I grew up with this story, and to see it come to what I thought of as such a beautiful, perfectly appropriate end, was, I'm getting choked up again, just magnificent, you know. It's an experience unlike any I've ever had in a cinema, and I might have like one or two more in my lifetime that are this profound and meaningful to me, you know. It was incredible, absolutely incredible. I think the only other moment I've ever had, just watching a movie in theaters that kind of hit me this hard, was watching Fast and Furious 7 and getting to the end and, you know, seeing that last final shot with Paul Walker in it. Because I, you know, just like Star Wars, I've been a fan of Paul Walker since I was a kid. Seen almost all of his movies, and you know, when he passed away, that shook me pretty hard. And then seeing that last moment was almost unbearable, and was just incredibly emotional. You know, so it's like, maybe, I don't know if anything else is going to be able to top, like, that stuff in terms of just, like, making me feel stuff. And I know it sounds really, really stupid for me to bring up Fast and Furious and Paul Walker and talk about how that made me super emotional, and, you know, and Star Wars, which, you know, like, there was no, like, I mean, it sounds weird, but to have a comparable sort of emotionality, level of emotion about these two wildly different things, but that's how it is for me, you know. I mean, I wept watching this movie, Star Wars, you know. Yeah. It just was incredible. Just an incredible experience for me. Yeah. I don't know what else to say, really. I got nothing else. It was just incredible, you know? Absolutely incredible. All right, well, that is our show. That will be the last Jim Goes to the Movies for the foreseeable future until this whole COVID stuff gets over and done with. I hope everybody's staying safe. If you or anybody you know has been affected by this, I want to send you all the love I have in my heart. I hope you get through it and come out the other side, because I can't imagine how heartbreaking it must be to be experiencing this global pandemic and I just really hope that you're doing good, and if you're not doing good, I hope you do better and get better. Anybody who right now is happy and healthy and fine, please stay safe. I genuinely send out all the love I have in my heart to all of you, because I want you to stay safe. And if unfortunately you have been affected by this, I want you to know that I'm thinking about you. Not that that means anything, because I'm not a scientist, I am not a doctor, I'm not a medical professional. So to me, that means almost nothing to offer that to you, because it's not helping you or doing anything. But, you know, I'm thinking about you guys, and I just want everybody to come out of this thing, come out on the other side, you know. So stay safe, be well. If you're not well, get better, please. I love you guys, and we'll get through this, you know. We'll get through it all together. Yeah. So that's the show. thank you so much for listening. If you like this, you'll definitely like Heath's show, Morning Mangami. You can definitely check out our other social media stuff. We've got Mangami Players. That's kind of our main thing right now. You can find us on all the different social media platforms, and you can use those pages, the Mangami Players pages, to link to our other social media stuff. So, for instance, we have a new Instagram page called What for Food, and we are making recipes and making them and showing you how we do how we did the things. And, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, maybe if you're like, hey, I'm in the mood for, like, maybe steak fajitas. Well, guess what? I put out a recipe for steak fajitas on What for Food. And we have a post that just came out today. A wonderful vegetarian pizza. And you should definitely check that out. Maybe make it for yourself at home, because it looks delicious. Yeah, so Mangami Players, other social media stuff, check out Morning Mangami, my partner Heath LeBombard's podcast show. Anything else? Nope. I guess that's it. All right, one last time, stay safe. I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Have yourself a wonderful night. Let's get through this lockdown quarantine stuff together. Stick together. Stay together. Send out your love. And for anybody who is in the medical field, anyone who's an essential worker, y'all badass, all right? So let's do it. Let's beat this thing. All right. Good night. Thank you. And I love you. Good night.
The Nightcap with Jim podcast is a Mangami production, hosted by James Smith, produced by Heath LeBombard and James Smith. For more Mangami content, visit Mangami Players all across the social medias.